Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great Friday morning. Debbie and I had my middle daughter, I mentioned this yesterday, my middle daughter Amy came in on Wednesday night, and with her three boys. Jack is four, Chase is two, and Drew is 5 months. And we gave them a little break. They're in Broken Bow, Oklahoma, enjoying just being away from kids and having a little overnighter. And so Debbie and I are flying solo with those three boys. And last night was a little rough, but not too bad. Debbie's still great at handling babies. I've never been much of a baby guy. I do better when they get a little older. So as soon as Jack turns 15, I'm going to really kick in. No, just kidding. I do really good. When they get to be about a year and a half, 2 years, man, that's my sweet spot for little kids. But we're having a great time. Well, speaking of having a great time, at First Baptist Texarkana, we have an event scheduled on a Sunday night, August 17th, a free event for the whole community with magician extraordinaire Ben Jackson. Debbie and I were introduced to Ben Jackson by a friend, David Hira, and he told us about Ben. And we went to see his show that he has there at the Four Seasons Hotel in Houston. That's Magic Music and Mayhem. And it's the number one rated show on TripAdvisor. If you go to Houston, I encourage you to go see Ben. Amazing in his presentation, in his sleight of hand. He is a master at working the room and making you feel just like you're part of what he's doing, and you just like him right off the bat. And so he is my guest today. We want to talk about magic and more with Ben Jackson. So Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you well. All right, I'm getting a little bit of echo, Devin, but if you can fix that for me, that'd be great. Okay, so Ben, I was reviewing your bio. You are a Texas A&M grad. You are going to be pre-med, so biomedical sciences degree with a minor in chemistry and business. The business would help you. But I don't imagine the medical helps you a lot in what you're doing now. How do you go from, hey, I'm going to be a doctor, to now I'm going to be a magician?
Yes, the age-old question. You know, of course, the biomedical science degree is the natural prerequisite for being a magician, I find out. I didn't necessarily consider doing magic vocationally ever. I certainly love magic for as long as I've, you know, maybe when I was 15 years old, I started practicing pretty hardcore every day and really studying sleight of hand and doing it all throughout college. But I was pretty convinced of like the route I would take, which would be I'll have a full-time career doing something else, some other vocational pursuit, something medically related. I did an internship doing pharmaceutical sales for Abbott Laboratories in Dallas, Texas, the summer before I graduated. And so I thought, oh, this is a great fit for me because I'll be out and about. I'll be personable, social. Mm-hmm. I'll mix and mingle with the doctors. I'll show them some magic, and you know, I'll maybe slave my magic as a passion for something I do in the evenings or on the weekends. But I'll have this job as my forefront. And it's so funny because when I graduated, which was December 2009. They weren't extending out job offers, at least to me anyway. And it was kind of a sour time for the economy. And I wasn't really convinced at that time that I wanted to go to medical school. Certainly a big pursuit, a big decision to take.
Sure.
So I thought, well, I didn't take my MCAT or any of the other entrance exams to a professional school, and I didn't get this job offer. Well, I'm just going to have to go back to Houston and kind of figure things out, maybe pursue some other options. And in the meantime, I'll do magic. Again, not that I all of a sudden graduated from college and said, hey, I'll be a magician today. It never went like that. But that was kind of the early seeds of, once I moved back home, now transitioning to magic as a full-time pursuit. Not that, again, not that was intentional. It wasn't intentional. But it just happened to snowball, roll into one event, one contact, one lead, one mentor, one right. Series of events that said, well, I guess I'll just do this.
So. Yeah. Okay, so I was reading you were, what, 8 years old when you saw your first trick or something like that that really captivated your mind and heart. I love this.
Yeah, I was, you know, we have some good friends of ours, my parents' friends, Blaine and Peggy Sampson. They're from Lawrence, Kansas. We would go up and visit them for Thanksgiving, you know, usually every other year, make this pilgrimage out, load everybody up in the minivan and drive out to Kansas for Thanksgiving. And, you know, my dad's good friend, Blaine, I guess he was he's still with us. He's an amateur magician, a magic enthusiast. He's a hobbyist. But he knew one really, really, really good trick, and it was after Thanksgiving Day dinner, and the table was clear. We're all gathered around the table, and he had a pack of cards in his hand, and he simply held the cards face down. He showed one card at his fingertips. He said, "Hey, Ben, red or black?" Which was a cue to me to guess the color of the card that he had face down in his hand. And I had no idea. My parents had no idea. 50-50 chance, a guess. Whenever he showed me a card and I thought it was red, he would deal into a red pile. Whenever he showed me a card and I thought it was black, he would deal into a black pile. And 52 questions later, the deck was separated into two piles of my choosing. And then we hovered over those packets. He turned the cards over and revealed they had been perfectly separated into all reds and all blacks. And to say I was fooled was an understatement.
Yeah.
I had just been dumbfounded by paper. So if I had to pinpoint a moment in time my fascination with magic began, that was it. Jaw open, brain in a blender, and then denied by Mr. Sampson when I asked him, "Hey, how'd you do that?" You know? So it was a thing that wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, he was a guy doing a SpongeBob routine with floppy clown shoes and rainbow streamers, and
right,
you know, that's good for the kids. No, he took in the whole room, and of course, my parents are in the room. And they're the smartest people on the planet, you know, as far as I'm aware.
Sure.
And I thought what was so interesting about it, too, was that it was just a pack of playing cards that I probably had access to that same power. You know, it's like, oh, wait right. a second. You're saying that the thing you just took out of that pencil drawer that was with the rubber bands and the scissors and the
sure.
pens.
Yeah.
That thing that I have at home, too, I could do the same thing if I only knew the secret.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of that barrier to entry, it's accessible because it's just cards,
yeah.
but it's also unobtainable because you have to know the secret. I think that was very interesting to me. So,
okay. You know. So, Ben, David Hira has become a good friend of mine, and David is well known in the magic world. And what makes David so great is not just the fact that he's good at his craft, but he is so personable. And it seems to me that, and you follow in those footsteps from my perspective, it seems to me that you have to know the technical side of sleight of hand things, but if you don't sell the sizzle, if you don't connect with the crowd, if you don't have an engaging personality and the humor, I mean, it's a whole show that you're putting on. It's not just watch me do this with the cards. Now, We went, Debbie and I, on a trip, my wife Debbie, to Maui, and there's this comedy shop. What's it called? I forgot the name of it.
Warren and Annabelle's.
Yeah, Warren and Annabelle's. I guess it burned down
yeah.
with. But
yeah,
but
I know Warren Gibson.
Yes.
Yeah, we've communicated in the past, but I was fortunate to go see Warren and Annabelle's before it burned down. But go on.
Well, okay, so one of the guys that was there was technically. I mean, just A+, but his personality, it wasn't like he was, I don't like this guy, but he's just not really like, man, this guy is awesome. his technical side was great, but his the sizzle wasn't as good. So he didn't really build the whole, you know, story, so to speak. So from your perspective, with a guy that does what you do, is it 50-50 on the technical versus the storytelling?
Oh, man. You know, you're right. There is a sliding scale. There's a spectrum of time investment. You know, I think there are some guys at one end of the spectrum who spend so much time on craft, technique, you know, the mechanics, the minutiae, the dexterity, the muscle memory of the moves. We call these people technicians. You know, they can do amazing work, but if you put them in front of a room full of human beings, then they crumble. You know, it's like, well, so it has to be both. And for my, you know, in my estimation, the best performers have that they can do both. They can be super high energy, super funny, engaging, sincere, whatever it is, and also do some killer magic. You know, I think like sometimes you hear a lot of talk about comedy magicians. And usually if you're a comedy magician, you really are not that talented as far as I shouldn't say talented, but the magic you're performing isn't that compelling, and you lean too heavily on the comedy. And so it almost becomes kind of gaggy. Oh, it's a punchline, it's a joke, it's a gag. But I was like, man, but now the magic suffers. Or but now if you come too down the other side, you're too focused on the magic, and now you have this personality like, hey, watch this red ball turn to this green ball, worship me. It's like, whoa, okay, so now you're on the opposite end, which is not where you want to be either. I always find that the best way I can approach it is, you know, I want to be like your next door neighbor, like that fun guy you could have a burger with or a beer with, and also I can blow your mind at the same time. And, you know, being approachable and likable. There's a great book by John Carney, a magician. He wrote a book called Carnicopia. And I think one line in the book that really sticks out to me is like, people are more sympathetic to humans than they are to gods. And so I feel like in my show, I have a lot of self-deprecating humor and a lot of things where I poke fun at myself just to be like, hey, I know that your time is precious. You came out to see the show. So I want to deliver the goods in a bunch of fronts. I want to be funny, be high energy, but also like not let the magic suffer. So I know it's a lot of things to weigh as you're composing a show, and how do you showcase your personality and not cheapen the audience experience when it comes to seeing great magic.
So. Well, I was thinking about this. So for you, pre-med, and so you become a surgeon, let's say. Well, you don't have to have a great bedside manner. It's nice if a doctor, especially a surgeon, has a good bedside manner, but you're really paying the guy to do well with your knee surgery, your heart surgery, whatever it might be. And so you might be not a very fun guy. I don't really care. I'm not hiring a fun guy. I'm hiring a guy. And it's like an airplane pilot. I don't really have to interact with you. I just want to make sure you can, you know, get this plane off
the
ground.
Do the job.
Land it safely. But your profession is way different from that. And I think that's one of the things, you know, with David Hira, who's been at our church a number of times, and David loves the Lord. And so he uses his presentation as a hook to share the gospel and to encourage people and to let people know that there's a God in heaven who loves them, who gave them his son for them on the cross. And it's a great vehicle to do that. And you really are, as we saw in your show in Houston, you leave that place saying, man, that was a lot of fun. And I don't know how he did this. You won't remember this, Ben, but you called me up on stage because it's a fairly small audience. What, about 50 people or so? You called me up
60,
on
stage. That's right.
You called me up on stage and you had my driver's license in a number of minutes in a block of ice. I don't know how in the world you did that. I was mesmerized. I'm standing right there, and I don't know how you did it. And I guess you're not going to tell us. So,
well, you know, I wouldn't want to ruin the fun, but I love having those. I call those snapshot moments. You know, if you can rewind the tape on the show and think about what do the audience remember about the show. If you can take it within a picture, like there I was with that block of ice and the driver's license inside, or you know, the Rubik's Cube effect or whatever. It's always nice to
It's just make amazing. This moment. Well, we're talking to Ben Jackson. He's a world-class magician. He's coming to First Baptist Texarkana for a big event on Sunday night, August 17th. We encourage you to come. It's free, and we'd love for you to come. We'll come back to Real Truth for Today with more Ben Jackson. Don't go away.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. We're talking to magician Ben Jackson, world-class magician. 1 Corinthians 9:23 says, I do all things for the sake of the gospel. That's what the Apostle Paul said. He wanted to win people to Jesus Christ. We want to win people to Jesus Christ at American Family Radio, American Family Association, and at First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. And so we're having a special event on Sunday night, August 17th at 6 o'clock with Ben Jackson. Now, the purpose of the event is, Ben, to draw people in. This is something that's different. We don't have programs like this in Texarkana. Now, if you live in Houston, you can go see Ben at the Four Seasons Hotel. But if you live in Texarkana, you got to travel 5 hours to go to Houston to go see him. So we're bringing him here, and we're going to wow the crowd, so to speak, and just bring people in for a fun time. But the purpose is to then share the good news. Now, Ben, Andre Cole, he's kind of magic royalty, from what I understand, with the tricks that he did. You're looking like you don't know who he is.
I don't know. Andre Cole. I mean, if I saw a picture of him, I'd recognize him, but go ahead.
Well, Andre, when I was in seminary, Andre came. He had big illusions.
Okay,
and he had like two 18-wheelers that would come in. He came to Champion Forest Baptist Church when I was there, and we did two nights of Ben Andre Cole and his amazing magic tricks. He would walk on water. He would do things. And then at the end, you asked David Heyer about him. At the end, he would do a thing about the resurrection, and he had a trick about, and he shared the gospel in his trick. But that was the first time I got interested in saying, hey, that's a good way to draw people in to share the good news with them. And so have you done these things at churches before?
I've certainly done programming at churches before, yes. Whether it's been for like a youth ministry, or I've done like a kind of like a date night for couples, you know, for like, we're doing a Valentine's Day theme, bring your spouse, come out and have fun at the church. I've done things like that. I have done a specially themed trick, actually, with David Hira's help for an Easter service. That was like 10 years ago, though. So yes, I to answer your question, yes, it's few and far between.
Yeah, very good. Okay, I was thinking about this. We had Dana Daniels. You know who Dana Daniels is?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
So another one of David Hira's magician friends. We saw him when we were at Warren and Annabelle's in Maui. And
yes.
he was excellent, and he has his parrot. He does all the comedy, and he sounds a little like Steve Martin the way he comes across. And anyway, I asked him, because he does his whole thing with the parrot, and I said, Dana,
Luigi,
have you
the second parrot?
Yeah, Luigi. Yeah. I said, have you ever had the parrot like take off? And he said, no, that doesn't ever happen. When he came to First Baptist Texarkana, we have stained glass in the back, and the parrot flew into the glass, and it didn't kill the parrot, but it stunned him, and it was kind of like, uh-oh, that's not supposed to happen. And so that leads me to this question, Ben. Have you had some situations over the years where it's like, uh-oh, this hasn't, now what do I do?
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. People always say, do you ever mess up in your show? And I go, yeah, I'm a regular guy. Regular guys mess up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course. The thing is with magic, though, is that It just depends upon the severity of the mess up. Is it detectable or not? I think the one thing that we have going for us as magicians is that sometimes people don't know where we're going, where we're headed. And they may not be aware of the intended effect. So for example, if I were a pilot and I was flying a plane, one of my engines went out, but I might still be able to land the plane. And maybe some people, I don't know how detectable that might be. Maybe that's a bad example, but in my world, that's kind of how I walk down that line, which is, oh, you know what? This didn't hit the way I wanted to, or you know what? I'm going to have to bail on this trick because something isn't going right. And I can pivot, you know, I can almost wear an improv comedian hat and I can, you know, dance to the next beat and skip over something. And that's really one of the strengths that magicians have. Now there are some times where that's it. I mean, there's no recovery.
Yeah.
There's no recovery. You got egg on your face. You have to own it. And I have painfully experienced that before. So yes, it's always a humbling moment.
Are those situations early on in your career, or does that still happen?
No, I guess I wouldn't say it's necessarily more on early in your career. I think hopefully it's less and less and less. There's a great expression, I think also one that David told me, I don't know who to credit it to, but he said something to the effect of amateurs practice something until they get it right. Mm-hmm. And professionals practice until they can't get it wrong.
That's a good say.
Yeah. And I really do take that to heart. When I'm putting a new routine into the show, it has to go through a lot of rounds of, you know, I'm going to experiment with it in front of my mirror here in my office, and I'll work on a new piece, and then I'll slowly put it into maybe a private show at someone's house for a small audience, like a test group, a focus group. Mm-hmm. And we do a technique in magic, or really, I probably, comedian is the same thing. We call it hammocking. It's like, where do you put in new material into your show? Mm-hmm. You put it in the middle. Because like a hammock, you have a strong post and a strong post and something kind of wishy-washy in the middle. So you want to open strong, end strong. You're going to try something new. Put it in the middle of your show.
Right.
And I'll do that. But yeah, I mean, like, when I'm at the Four Seasons, I'll do, for a typical weekend, I'm there on a Friday and Saturday night, and I do five shows during that time. It's two on Friday, three on Saturday. And, you know, Saturday's a long day. I'll do 3 hour and a half shows back to back to back, 4, 7, 9. And you're really emptying the tank every show. And, you know, live theater, live entertainment. Yes, things have gone wrong. So I'm not immune. I'm not immune to mistakes. But, you know, I think sometimes, though, I think when you win the crowd and people are on your side,
yeah, they're rooting
for you.
You
can be tying your shoes. They don't care. It's like we're going to have fun nonetheless. So I certainly want to give it my best, be mindful of, are there things I can do to prevent things from going wrong? Yes. But if it does, it's not brain surgery. It's just a magic show. You'll be fine. You know,
I think, Ben, I heard a clip or a quote from George Burns. I think it was George Burns, and he said a paying audience is always better to perform in front of than a non-paying audience, because a paying audience wants you to be good because they've invested money. A non-paying audience is like, you know, what are you going to do? You know, what have you done for me lately? Yeah, that was
you're exactly right. You know, it's so funny you say that. People say, well, what's your favorite type of venue to perform in? And I would say that it probably is the show at the hotel. And the reason being is for that very thing you mentioned, which is people are coming out and they're invested in the show. Mm-hmm. They're invested financially. They're invested with their time, their excitement, their energy, their effort. They want to be there. It's date night. It's, right. You know what, gosh, it's family reunion. We haven't been around with grandpa and our 15-year-old granddaughter in a really long time. And right. We're all getting together. to have a great time. And so people are really, they're leaning on you to, hey, you're the focal point of our night. We've invested to be here. And I tell this to a lot of performers. They say, you do 3 shows in a day. You know, where do you get the energy from, or how do you stay sharp, or what refreshes you between shows? And I'll tell you, it's very simple. It's the awesome reality that they're there. They came. They made. Mm-hmm. They jumped through the hoops. They bought your tickets. They parked the car. They got dressed up in the cocktail attire. They made their way up to see the show. And if you don't empty the tank for right. those people, and you phone it in,
right?
Well, what a shame. What a shame. And so I contrast that to when I do a corporate group, and I make my living, you know, doing really 2 things, my residency show with the hotel, and then also my other weekends and dates are all private corporate events. And I travel around, but a lot of my work is in Houston. It's such a funny, interesting dynamic, because corporate groups, no one paid to see you. I mean, yes, the company did write me the check to be there.
Right.
But the group, usually you're a pleasant, or maybe pleasant is not the right word. You're a surprise nonetheless. You're like, what do we have tonight? Oh, we have a magician. And you have like this, you might have to prove yourself more quickly,
right.
and battle pre-existing stereotypes in people's minds about, oh, I don't know. And it's so funny. I had a group. I did a show for a bunch of lawyers. I do a lot of work for lawyers, but this one particular group was a holiday party, and we had a great time. Show was sensational, and they walked up to me and they said, "You know, Ben, when we first found out there's going to be a magician doing our party, we thought, oh, this is going to be so lame, so bad, so cheesy. I'm not interested." And I'm right here, you know. Okay, no offense. And I said, "You know what? Can I just tell you this? The feeling's mutual. When I found out I was doing a show for a bunch of lawyers, my goodness, I thought, oh gosh, not those people."
Yeah.
So it's funny. It's funny to dip your toes in different pools and find out how you're what the response is. So.
Okay, so Ben, with you, you do a lot of things with cards. You're very good. I saw in your bio that you actually performed in a movie as the hands for was it Jonathan
Joseph
Levitt?
Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience.
Oh my gosh! Well, it was a really fun thing. I've only done that type of hand double work once, and effectively, Robert Rodriguez, who's a director in Austin, Texas, he's the creator of a series of movies called Sin City, and it's based off of an old Frank Miller comic book. And anywho, they filmed the entire movie in Austin, Texas, in their studio on a big green screen. And effectively, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays the character known as Johnny, who is this young, cocky, card-sharp hustler, gambler guy, one of the crucial elements of his character is that he has to be very dexterous with his hands. He has to be skillful with the deck of cards. And they were looking for a hand double,
mm-hmm.
or a private coach to instruct him how to do some of these flourishy moves. Not necessarily magic per se, but one of the things they were really looking for is someone who could do a one-handed shuffle. Take the deck with one hand,
right.
split it in half, and then weave the cards in together with one hand, which is a skill set that I have. And they put out a casting call. I didn't even know about it. My friend contacted me, I guess, who's in that world. It's like, hey, they're looking for a magician or someone who can do this stuff. And so here's the email, send off your information. So I was like, okay, I did. I put something together real fast and sent it to them. They called me within 5 hours and said, can you be in Austin tomorrow? I said, sure. And so I, you know, and again, I don't really know nothing about the director, the movie, whatever, but I go in, I'm in a boardroom meeting, in walks the director. I show him, he's like, hey, show me your stuff. I do all the flashy cuts and cool flourishes. And he goes, okay, you're hired, follow me. And I walk out of his office, and like I was Dorothy leaving my black and white world into a land of color. And he opened the door, and in that same building, unbeknownst to me, was a movie studio and a movie being filmed right then and there. And I'm now on the set of this movie, And I meet Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I'm like, oh my gosh, hello.
That's Tommy and, in Third Rock from the Sun.
That's right. That's right. He was in Inception, and he was in The Dark Knight Rises. Uh-huh. And anywho, and so it was just amazing to meet him. And my approach was very, you know, at first they wanted me to teach him to do the actual stuff himself.
Yeah, that would
but
be too hard.
You can't do that in 48 hours.
No.
So very quickly we decided, all right, I'll just get me a duplicate costume, and we'll just do a lot of the hand work. And anyway, but that's kind of the long story short, which was I was there for like 5 days. And
oh, it took that long to do it?
Yeah, because, you know, it's so weird with filming a movie. It's they're on very tight time schedules. And, you know, when they need you like a heart attack. And when they don't need you, you know, you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs. So I'm just kind of readily accessible. I'm the magician on call, you know.
And
so I don't know when they need to step in and film something. But when they do, it's like, get ready, do it right now. In fact, I actually have.
Did you go to your trailer, Ben, then when they
These are the actual cards I used in the movie right here.
Oh, is that right? Well, cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, when they say action, are you a little more nervous doing the things that you normally do, or?
I mean, a little bit, yeah. When you have like an entire cast and crew doing this, you know, and now you got Frank Miller, like the famous comic book artist, who also did illustrations for Batman, and you know, who's watching, and now Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's watching, and now Robert Rodriguez, who is watching, and the whole crew, lighting people, audio engineers, they're all watching.
Yeah.
Do it. I mean, and I also what was so hard about it was that my body, I mean, I was doing the move at such awkward angles.
So they could just get your hand.
Crop them up. So I'm really doing something in a very foreign position that I've never done it before in my life. So it was certainly pressure filled, but when you get that, you get that take. That's all you need.
That's good. Well, we're talking to magician Ben Jackson. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. When we come back from the break, we'll open the phone lines and take your calls at 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call and let's talk. We'll be right back.
If you could save a life, would you? Preborn, the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, gives the gift of life, on average, 200 times a day because of you. Meet Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
Our grandkids may well ask us, back then in the late 20th, early 21st century, they were killing babies, Grandpa. What did you do about that? And you can say, I sponsored a baby for $28 an ultrasound for a mother, see her baby every month.
An ultrasound can be the difference between the life and death of a baby.
That ultrasound changed everything for me. It really did. That made it all worthwhile to know that I was going to have a little blessing. And when she got here, it was just, oh my gosh.
Preborn provides you the opportunity to give the gift of life to a baby. For information, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. I'm talking to renowned magician Ben Jackson. He's coming to First Baptist Texarkana in just a few weeks on Sunday night, August 17th, for a big night. Invite your friends. It's free. And Ben, we talked a little bit about that. It might be a little difficult since it's free, but you're going to be coming into people that want to be wowed and want you to do well for sure. But we want people to bring their friends. We're doing this for the sake of the gospel, to share the gospel with people, to tell people about Jesus who's mighty to save. And so, Ben, that brings me to your own testimony. So you grew up in my neck of the woods. You went to Klein High School. And my wife taught in the Klein School District. I was in Cypress School District, and first graduating class of Cypress Creek High School, which is not very far from Klein. But tell us a little bit about your spiritual journey.
Well, yeah, it's funny you mentioned Chambers Forest Baptist Church. That's, I mean, I didn't, not that I attended there, but that was literally a stone's throw away from where I grew up. I grew up in off Yorkminster Drive, Steubenville Airline. Mm-hmm. So I know exactly. I know exactly where you are. Where you mentioned that earlier. I grew up going to John Wesley United Methodist Church with my mom and dad, and that's when I was kind of first exposed to the gospel. And you know, we were longtime church attenders. Grew up going to the church, Sunday school, you know, youth group, and doing kind of the traditional Sunday activities. But I probably didn't really start delving deeper into my personal relationship with the Lord until I went into Texas A&M. And I came across Breakaway Ministries, mm-hmm. with Ben Stewart. And I think his preaching and his passion for the Lord and his presentation of the gospel was so compelling. It's not as though I guess I didn't really feel as strongly connected in the church I grew up in, just because I feel like a lot of it was maybe over my head, or maybe I just wasn't, fully mature enough to grasp the weight of the gospel, or maybe the sermons were too much about golf and I didn't really pick up on the metaphor. I don't know what it was, but I feel like, with Ben Stewart, his knowledge for scripture, his also ability to kind of bring in other, historical context or outside, maybe literary references or historical events or just another way to connect to people that was so compelling, that is very moving to me to really understand and unpack the tenets of Christianity even more so. And I feel like that's when it's a transitional time in your life anyway, to really be kind of out from underneath mom and dad's roof and kind of find out who you are as a person and where you want to lay your roots in. And I feel like not only that was a big pivot point for me, but also being in an organization called Impact at Texas A&M University, which was a kind of it's a Christian, almost like a fish camp, freshman orientation mm-hmm. camp for right. incoming students. And I feel like that time with me in that organization with the men's group I was involved with was also a very formative experience, because it was really the first case I had seen a lot of raw vulnerability with men who were trying to pursue living out their faith, mm-hmm. and admitting when they had fallen short and trying to chase the path that would bring God the most glory and say, hey, I'm struggling here. I want to press into you here and be accountable on certain areas. And so that was a very formative time for me in my faith with Christ. And I really value those years tremendously. So that's kind of the origin story, where a lot of that thing kind of maybe came more apparent, and more clear for me.
Mm-hmm.
But not now, necessarily hit by lightning, all of a sudden I was in a deep, dark place and now my life turned around. But I feel like, as it is with the case with everyone who's reconciled back to God, it's a heart change. It's a change of temperament. It's I desire this and not this.
Right.
And that's, I think, how God woos us back to his love. Yeah.
Okay. Now, Ben, you got married in what year?
2016.
Okay, and you have, I'm trying to remember, is it three kids? Don't you have twins?
I have three girls, yeah. I have three girls. I have a pair of twins. They are 2.5 years old. They'll be three in October, and I have an 8-month-old baby. Her name is June, and she'll, she's 8 months. So it's three under three. It's a wild house. Wild.
Okay, I said at the start of the program, we're watching our grandkids, and so it's three boys. I had three girls. And three boys. Boys are way different from girls. They're just.
I believe it.
Their attention span just seems to be a lot shorter. So they're tearing stuff up at a quicker rate. Although girls can hold a close second. So your house is busy.
I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, right now it's not like the girls are involved in any extracurricular activities. It's busy in the sense that, the the Jackson House is run off of, as far as like our, you know, how we make a living is through magic. You know, that's what my wife's a stay-at-home mom, so we're very fortunate to have that. And so she's working all day. She's working right. all day. She gets hard up job. With the girls. It's an incredibly hard job. And so it's you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say divide and conquer, because that kind of, it doesn't have the right tonality, but a complementarianism of, you have responsibilities, I have responsibilities, and when I'm not doing my responsibilities, I want to hop in and help you with your responsibilities. Right. And so we're being pulled in a lot of different directions. And of course, as a business owner, you know, you wear a lot of hats. You're the accountant, you're the marketer, you're the sure. executive assistant, you're the talent, you're the, you know, you wear a lot of hats. I mean, especially when I, you know, when I get phone calls, or when I get phone calls because people mess up their ticket order to buy tickets to come see me at the show, I'm the guy who answers the phone. And they're like, oh, hey, I didn't know I was going to talk to you. Yeah. Like, well, here I am, you know. So it's a small operation in that regard. So that's why it's a busy house in that sense of, if I'm not working here, I'm working with my wife yeah. and you know, with our girls. So don't have as much luxury free time. And that's the hardest thing, too. It's like, well, when do you work on new material? I don't know. When do I work on new material?
You're right. Be hard. Yeah,
so.
Okay, so I have a good friend. He's been on the program many times, and that is Doyle Dykes, who's an amazing fingerstyle guitarist. But he's playing the guitar all the time. He's practicing all the time. And because he's got to keep his dexterity up, and he's, you know, you got to keep at it with an instrument. But now when you're doing all the stuff that you're doing with cards and your ability to, you know, maneuver the cards and all, you got to keep that up. Is that not right?
Yes, I think so. You have to keep it up. I find that the way I keep it up is
just because
I perform all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily, as I once did, have, you know, long practice sessions, you know, stay in front of my mirror and working on new moves hour after hour. But because I perform so much and perform as my living, I'm always, you know, inches away from a pack of cards. I'm always right. doing this. I'm always doing it. So it has become a part of you. And but I'm not as necessarily dedicated to focus on new time, dedicated practice time. But that is certainly the case when it comes to developing new material, because as opposed to a musician, right, who focuses on just one instrument, they play the guitar. Magic is, you know, it's really all encompassing, especially if you want to have variety in your show, which I do. I don't want to just have, you know, the show is be the same thing over and over and over and over again. Nothing, you know, an hour and a half of card tricks is like, okay, how many ways can you find a card? So what people may not appreciate about magic is that it is so multidisciplinary, where yes, you might be great with a pack of cards, but then you pick up a coin and you go, ah, this doesn't translate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't translate. It's like learning another instrument, you know? So there's a lot of time invested just to even get yourself to a competent level when learning a new piece of magic. Now there are some things, you know, where you can, like, I'm sure if I were a skilled guitarist, like the guy you mentioned, you know, if you just play that one instrument over and over and you get a new piece of sheet music, you can learn it right away. Likewise, if I read one of my magic books and it's a card trick, I go, oh, okay, you do this, 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 and this. Okay, I can put that together. But if it's a foreign thing, if it's a new routine that you've never done before, now you got to put in the work and start from zero. And now you feel like what am I? But I've been doing magic for 15 years. Yeah, but you've never done this. And that's the newness that each routine can bring, especially if the prop is different. And again, so much of my magic, though, too, is it's not necessarily big box driven. Right. A lot of it is skill-based magic. And I think when modern audiences go to see magic, and if it is a show consisting of a lot of big box stage illusions, they probably don't say, that guy's amazing. They probably say, that box is amazing. You know, that's how I feel about it.
Well, okay. So, Ben, on those big box things, because they had the program on for a number of years, where's the mass magician or whatever, and he was revealing all the secrets and stuff. But obviously you're doing tricks, but you have to have skill to do those tricks. Some of the big box things doesn't seem like you have to have as much skill to pull that off. And once you realize how the trick is done, it's like, oh, well, that's, I mean, it's kind of a letdown, because it's, you think it's this, you know, you think it's magic, and it's not. It's just this, you know, illusion that you
there's always a method to the magic. There's always a method to the magic. There's, you know, there's nothing ever supernatural, anything that I do, or but you're right. It's there's always a trick to it. Right.
So when you watch other guys, can you figure out pretty quickly what they're doing?
I would say yes, for the most part. Not to be braggadocious, but this is what I do. You know, it's all I do. So I spend a lot of time, you know, in this world of magic, and yeah, I think I can pick apart a lot of things. Not to say that I'm never fooled, because that's one of the nicest things you can tell another magician, which is hence the popularity of the TV show Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Yeah,
which is the whole premise of that show, is to take two seasoned veterans, two seasoned pros, and try to get one past them. So that's a nice compliment to achieve if you have.
Okay, now,
say, hey,
yeah, Ben, I watched your segment on Penn and Teller, and mm-hmm. they initially said, "Oh, we figured out how you did this," which was an amazing trick that you did. But then they came back and said, "No, we didn't think, we thought you did it this way, but you did it another way." So in magic, I guess there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Oh, for sure. And it's funny you mentioned that exact expression. That was the approach. And if, you know, for the viewers who are uninitiated, the trick that Pastor Jeff is talking about, I did the magic trick on the TV show Penn and Teller Fool Us. Well, it's a classic trick where you borrow a ring, you make it vanish, and the ring reappears inside of a ball of yarn. Now, I had additional layers to that. It wasn't just inside a ball of yarn in the core of the yarn ball. It was inside of a ring box that was tied with an elastic ribbon, a bow, and inside that ring box, was the ring, and the box was inside the ball of yarn, and the ball of yarn was inside of a sealed mason jar. And so there's different layerings to that effect, but if you read any magic literature, there's only one way to get a ring and a ball of yarn. You look at all the magic books, and if I showed that trick to anybody, they would say, oh, you must have done it this way. Mm-hmm. But that was the strategy. In this case, was to develop another way to skin a cat, to develop a routine where, oh yes, I've seen this before. Oh yes, this is a classic piece of magic. Oh yes, I know where this is going. And then you lead them down the garden path, and you turn the hose on them. You say, well, not today. And that was the strategy. This trick was developed alongside a guy named Brent Braun out of Indiana, and we took a classic trick, a trick that I really love doing, and also a trick that had never been on the show before, and made it where it was a brand new method. That's what we call how the tricks are done in magic. We call them methods. And this new method was really, was incredibly fooling deservedly so. That's why they were quick to point it out. What's interesting about the show, of course, is why was there that kind of flip? Why do they say you didn't fool us?
Right.
I don't know how much time we have, but...
Yeah, we just have about 15 seconds.
Okay, well, long story short, they genuinely thought they had me. We had a conversation backstage because there was some confusion on stage. And to their credit, when they realized they were way off base, to their credit, they were intellectually honest enough to
bring
me
back. That's good. Well, we've been visiting with magician extraordinaire Ben Jackson. He'll be at First Baptist Texarkana on Sunday night, August 17th. It's free admission. We'd love for you to come, even if you have to travel a few hours. It's going to be a great, great night. Thanks for listening to Real Truth for today. Ben, thanks for being my guest. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.